That may not sound like Christmas to you, but that chainsaw going to work at a Central Illinois Christmas tree farm is the first step towards making spirits bright for somebody. While sales of artificial Christmas trees have grown, many households still prefer real trees for the holidays. Today on Focus, we'll look at the industry that provides those trees and the research that goes into making those trees as fresh and sturdy and long-lasting as possible. We'll talk to an area Christmas tree farmer about his work and a plant pathologist who specializes in developing trees that keep their needles as long as possible. I'm Jim Meadows. Our program continues after the news. This is WYLL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3 Urbana. I'm Jim Meadows, inviting you to call in with a pledge during our mini pledge drive, $36,000 in 36 hours. You can do it at 217-244-9455 or make a pledge at willpledge.org. Welcome to Focus. Christmas trees that are actually trees face big competition nowadays from the artificial variety. Trees made of plastic or other materials have made their way into a majority of American homes, at least according to Wikipedia. They're seen as safer, more convenient, and more environmentally responsible than natural trees. The natural tree people would argue those points. And there are still plenty of natural trees being set up and decorated each Christmas. Later on in this program, we'll talk with a Central Illinois Christmas tree farmer about the work he does in fulfilling the demand for real Christmas trees. Right now, let's look at the quest for a better Christmas tree through science. Our first guest is a plant pathologist and extension specialist at Washington State University. And Christmas trees are a big part of Dr. Gary Chastagner's research. Gary, welcome to Focus.
Good morning. Or afternoon, I guess, in your area.
No, we're still in the morning here.
Okay.
Gary will be with us for the first half hour of Focus, so call now if you have a question for him about Christmas trees. We're interested in hearing whether you put up a real tree or an artificial one and why. Our toll-free number at Focus is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. Email us at will-talk@illinois.edu, and you can send your questions to Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. Gary, I understand that you work with the trees that are grown for Christmas trees, but is there a particular area that you focus on?
I'm a plant pathologist, as you indicated, so I work on diseases that affect the production of Christmas trees, and then I have a fairly large program that looks at factors affecting the post-harvest quality of Christmas trees.
And post-harvest for Christmas trees, essentially, how well the tree stands up, well, to being a Christmas tree, being chopped down and stuck up in a stand in someone's home.
That's correct. Basically, you're looking at moisture retention and needle retention issues.
So in terms of what the industry needs, you're looking at the trees that do the best job of staying moist and not dropping needles.
That's correct.
Okay. How do you get into a position like that? That's a pretty specialized job.
Well, it's interesting. I was hired in 1978, actually, and to work on ornamental bulb crops, and the Christmas tree industry here in the Pacific Northwest is fairly large, and they were having some issues with a needle cast disease, which is a fungus disease at the time, on Douglas fir, and they really didn't have anyone to work on that, and so I started working on Christmas trees at that point in time, trying to help the industry solve this needle cast issue. And then as part of that, I started doing some post-harvest work on the effect of this needle cast disease on the post-harvest quality of trees. In other words, did it affect how fast they dried down or needle retention? And so that was the start of it a little over 30 years ago.
The needle cast disease, now, I had been reading something about what may be a different ailment for these trees, something Phytophthora root rot. Is that separate from the needle cast disease?
Yes, it is. There are a number of different types of diseases that can occur on Christmas trees. And Phytophthora root rot is a soil-borne fungal-like organism that causes a rot of the roots and ultimately can kill trees, it tends to occur in areas where you have poorly drained soils that favor the development of the disease, and has become a little more of an issue as the industry has started to grow more species such as Fraser fir and noble fir, which can be quite susceptible to that disease.
You know, that maybe comes up to a point of review now. When we're talking about Christmas trees, what varieties of trees are used for Christmas trees?
Well, there's a long list of different types of conifers that are used as Christmas trees.
And conifers, by that we mean?
Cone-bearing trees such as pines, spruces, Douglas fir, Fraser fir.
And which are also evergreen trees.
That is correct, yes.
So we're talking, I heard spruce, I heard firs, I heard pines, pine.
Douglas firs, which are a little different than a true fir. Those would be the principal species. But if you look at the sort of the change in the industry over the last 50 years or so, what has happened is we've gone from growing spruces and pines, which are fairly well adapted to a variety of different environmental conditions and soil conditions, to Douglas fir, balsam fir back east would be a very common species that occurs naturally in forest and is also widely used historically and is still an important Christmas tree species. But one of the things that has changed dramatically in the last 30 years or so has been the shift to species such as Fraser fir, particularly in North Carolina and some of the eastern states, and here in the Pacific Northwest, the shift from Douglas fir to noble fir. Douglas fir is still important, still accounts for about half of the production, but noble fir now accounts for about half of the production. So there's been this shift and a decreased plantings of Scotch pine and certainly some spruces in favor of these Fraser fir and noble fir.
We're talking with Gary Chastagner of Washington State University about Christmas trees and the science of getting the best ones. Gary will be with us for the first half hour of Focus, so call now if you have a question for him about Christmas trees. Our toll-free number is 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. And we are at will-talk@illinois.edu, Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. Gary, what has driven the shift to these particular species of trees for Christmas trees over the years?
Largely, it's because these species tend to have very good moisture and needle retention characteristics. They also tend to have fairly stiff branches that allow for larger ornaments to be held and displayed on the tree. And in general, they have very desirable foliage characteristics, the color, the length of the needles, etc. Consumers just view them as a desirable type of a tree to have, and the industry's responded and is growing more and more of these types of trees.
Can these trees be grown in a wide variety of climates, the United States being a pretty big place?
The noble fir is fairly restricted to the coastal areas in the Pacific Northwest. It doesn't do well where you have sort of continental winter temperatures. It can be damaged by cold temperatures. I have seen some noble fir in some places in Michigan and things like this, but it's a very, very small amount. Fraser fir can be grown over a much wider geographical area. Out here, it doesn't do too well because we don't have summer precipitation, and none of our fields are irrigated, and so it doesn't do well under those conditions. But certainly in the other major production regions and a lot of choose-and-cut farms, you'll see a lot of Fraser fir, as well as a much greater diversity of some of the different types of conifers that are used as Christmas trees.
Do these trees do well in, like, southern climates and hot weather?
You tend to have more pines being grown in southern climates and stuff. So most of the large amount of Christmas tree production that occurs in the U.S. tends to be in the more northern states, central to more northern states. So if you look at the major production regions, they're primarily North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and the Pacific Northwest. So there's a few states that are producing the bulk of the trees that you see, certainly at commercial retail lots. There's a lot of states where you'll find choose-and-cut farms, but they're not shipping trees across a wide area.
Well, that's interesting. I was thinking back to my childhood. Grew up here in Illinois, but I spent one Christmas with my grandparents in Louisiana back in the 1960s, and I remember the Christmas tree looking different. Thinking about it as an adult, I assume now that it was a pine tree, much less bushy than the Christmas trees you see around here, but something that grows in abundance in central Louisiana. But that would still not be the sort of tree that is truly popular, it sounds like. So it sounds like there are a lot of Christmas trees that really travel to get to their final destination.
That is true. I mean, when you look at go back and look at the statistics for Christmas tree production, in the early 1950s, probably a very high percentage of the trees that were being used as Christmas trees were coming out of sort of natural forest or natural regeneration areas. They tended to have very low densities as far as branching and things like this. And as a result of some things that have happened over the years, the industry started growing trees in plantations where they're planted as a crop, and they started culturing the trees, cutting the branches back and shearing them to increase the density. Some of the tree improvement programs have looked for sources of trees that have more buds on them, that make more branches to fill up the tree. And so you're right. When I was a kid growing up, we had some pretty scrawny looking trees compared to the trees that are available today. And part of that has been a result of the change in production. And today, virtually all trees are coming out of sort of plantation-type production, with a very small amount coming out of areas where there's natural regeneration.
Let's take a caller now, and this is on line 4. Tim from Charleston, good morning. You're on Focus.
I have to start by saying, go Cougs. Now, often we hear a Pullmanite on the radio around here.
Good morning.
Good morning. I was curious about the research that goes into developing new strains of tree. We get a Fraser fir we have for a couple of years. We buy it locally, but I know they're shipped in from North Carolina. And so I guess it's kind of a twofold question. I think I heard you say that they will grow more than just there. Is it something in our soil, our climate here in Illinois that we don't grow them, or is it just easier to continue growing the type of trees you've been growing? And then the second part of that, I guess, is much like in the apple industry where, you know, the Honeycrisp is a great new strain. That's from Washington State, isn't it?
I'm not. There's a lot of it grown in Washington. I'm not certain whether it originated in Washington.
All right, but it. But are there developments? Are people doing stuff to crossbreed trees or something to get the needle retention and the shape and all that kind of stuff?
Okay, let me try and answer the first one. I believe probably Fraser fir are grown in some places in Illinois. I mean, I've done some retail lot surveys in Illinois and gone to some choose and cut farms as part of my research program when I'm traveling around looking at moisture contents and tree quality. And I've seen Fraser fir in some farms and in Illinois. And certainly it is being planted more commonly. But North Carolina has been the major production region for, or the major production state for Fraser fir. It's the second, has the second highest production of Christmas trees in the U.S., second to Oregon. And so there's just a lot of North Carolina trees that are shipped to a variety of market places, and that may be why you're seeing you know, North Carolina grown Fraser fir. They do produce a very high quality tree. They're growing at high elevation, get lots of summer precipitation, and that's an area where native, where Fraser fir is native. But I've also seen high quality Fraser fir in other production areas in Wisconsin and Michigan and places like that. But your second question about efforts to improve trees or identify improved trees, there's a lot of work being done along those lines. North Carolina State University, John Frampton is a professor there, works on genetics of Christmas trees, particularly Fraser fir, and so they're always looking for sources of Fraser fir that are superior as far as growth characteristics, and more recently looking at post-harvest quality. And certainly that is occurring in most areas where you have major Christmas tree production, that there are these sort of tree improvement programs. And we've developed a detached branch test where we can cut branches off of trees and run some post-harvest trials on those branches and determine whether that tree that we've harvested the branches from genetically has the superior needle retention characteristics that would be desirable. And this is changing a lot of how growers and people in the Christmas tree and conifer nursery business are evaluating the potential quality of trees for Christmas.
Tim, I want to thank you for the phone call. We are talking about Christmas trees with Gary Chastagnier, a plant pathologist at Washington State University, who makes this his business to study Christmas trees and pretty much on the cutting edge at times. I understand you spend some of your time traveling around looking for new varieties, I guess, starting from the seed.
That is correct. In some cases, we do trials with existing plantings that people have. Some growers have experimental plantings of sort of exotic or new species that are not commonly grown. And particularly because of my post-harvest research program, I'll do some collaborative things with growers and we'll test trees to determine whether or not they have really good post-harvest characteristics. And two of the species that we've seen a fair increase in use because of some disease and insect resistance and also some potential for post-harvest quality is Nordman and Turkish fir. These are Eurasian species that occur around the Black Sea in Russia, Republic of Georgia, and Turkey. And in 2010, I had an opportunity to go to Turkey to do some collections of some specific sources of Turkish and Trojan firs that we'd previously identified some regions in that country that appeared to have good quality trees, produce good quality trees when seed from those regions were planted over here. And so we did a much more extensive collection over there and are just finishing up some of those evaluations in a series of trials out here in the Pacific Northwest.
How much of it, as far as getting the best post-harvest effect, the best Christmas tree on the stand, is nature versus nurture? I think you talked a little bit about some things that Christmas tree farmers do these days to get the best tree.
Well, certainly the Christmas tree farmer can do a certain amount and stuff. But once the tree is cut, it's really dependent a lot on how that tree is handled and particularly how the consumer handles the tree. And over the years, we've tested 16 or so different species of trees and looked at their post-harvest quality when they're displayed in water versus when they're displayed dry. And displaying trees in a water-holding stand after you've made a freshly cut base, there's a common recommendation and stuff. I don't think most people really understand how much of a difference that makes in tree quality, how much of a difference it makes in the retention of moisture and minimizing needle loss. And people really don't, I think, have an understanding of how much water a tree really could use when it's displayed indoors. As a general rule, our research has indicated that if you have a tree and put it in a water-holding stand, the stand should hold at least 1 quart of water per inch of stem diameter of the tree. So if you had a tree that had a 4-inch diameter base, you would need a stand that held at least 1 gallon of water.
And just water is okay, I understand, because I had gone online and see things about people putting various sugary things from soda to honey along with their water. Aspirin, in one case, I'm not quite sure what that does, but is any of that helpful?
No, a lot of research has been done looking at so-called water additives, and the research basically indicates that water alone is the most effective ingredient, if you will, in maintaining the freshness and minimizing needle loss problems. The temperature of the water is not that important. Preservatives, water additives are effective, you know, with some cut flowers, but with Christmas trees, the research that's been done, certainly all of ours and most of the research that's been done in other places, just indicates that water alone is the most important thing.
How long can, you know, if you're careful and keep a tree watered, how long can you expect a tree to last in pretty good shape?
It varies some by species of trees. For example, here in the Pacific Northwest, if you had a Douglas fir, and our Douglas fir are a little different than the Douglas fir that are grown back in your area. You know, in the like in Michigan, Pennsylvania, those Douglas fir are an intermountain Douglas fir. Ours are coastal Douglas fir. But if you displayed a Douglas fir in dry, it might last for 7 to 10 days. If you put it in water, you can probably expect that tree to last 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks. Conversely, if you take a Fraser fir or a Noble fir and display it dry, those species are going to last probably for at least 2 weeks, maybe a little longer. If it's displayed dry, if you display it in water and it's not next to a heat source and things like this, you could expect that tree to last fairly easily for 4 to 6 weeks. And actually, in some of our trials, we have trees that will last for 2 months. I think the longest we've ever run a trial is 3 months, and we've had some trees at the end of 3 months that are still in very good condition.
Is a cut tree that's kept well watered, is in any technical sense, once it's separated from its root system, alive, or are we just running moisture through a dead tree?
No, it's still you know, biologically, it still thinks it's alive. Well, I shouldn't say it thinks it's alive. It behaves like it is alive. It's still respiring. It's transpiring water and stuff. We've actually had trees, when we've displayed them for 2 months to 3 months, they've actually broken bud and started to grow, even though they don't have a root system. But the water is being taken up and is maintaining the moisture level that's sufficient to support the biological activity that's normally taking place in the needles. The light levels, of course, are a little different and things like this, but the tree is not dead. It's physiologically, it's still very much alive when it's indoors.
Let's take another quick call. This is on line one. David from Urbana, good morning. You're on Focus. Good morning, David. I'm afraid we've lost him. I believe David had a question about the advisability of bringing exotic trees into the country. If you're dealing with, I don't know if you're dealing with seeds or cuttings, but in terms of these trees as crops or whether they actually get into the general tree population, does that bring up any environmental issues in terms of the overall just balance of vegetation in North America?
That's a really good question, and primarily the major concern that one has is the concern about bringing in plant material and bringing in exotic pests or diseases that we don't have here. And there's very strict guidelines on the movement of plant material with conifers. You cannot bring any cuttings or foliage and things like this. You can bring seed, but that seed is tested to ensure that it does not have pathogen and insect pest. In some cases, it's treated in a variety of ways to prevent those from being carried on the seed. And then the seed is imported, if you will, into the U.S. And then is grown in nurseries and stuff. There's for many of these species, they're not going to cross-pollinate, if you will, with other species and stuff. And for a lot of the cases, of course, Christmas trees are being harvested before they ever mature, if you will, to produce pollen and things like this. So it's a minimal risk, if you will, of creating a situation where you have an invasive stand of, let's say, Nordman fir that just starts spreading all over the place. That's not going to happen.
Okay. Well, Dave, Gary Chastagner, I wanted to thank you for coming on Focus to talking to us about the science of getting the better Christmas tree. Gary is a plant pathologist and extension specialist at Washington State University. Gary, thank you for being on the program.
My pleasure.
And we'll be back after this break with more about Christmas trees here on Focus on WILL.
And you are listening to Focus here on WILL. We are going to take a short break from the program to talk a little bit about our $36,000 and 36 hours year-end radio campaign. My name is John Steinbacher. I am the membership director here at Illinois Public Media, and I'm joined by our station manager, Bob Culkeen.
Hey, John, it's great to be here, and I love the 36-hour focus that we have on this mini drive to close out the year. And the way we can get to that $36,000 is by people going to the phone, actively picking up the phone and giving us a call at
244-9455.
Wow, I say that number in my sleep, and it just escaped me. Because I'm thinking of beautiful Christmas trees.
That's right.
That's what it is. What a story we have tonight.
Yeah.
Really appropriate for the season that we have. We have someone coming up later talking about tree farms and how to grow the trees and how to select trees. Again, it's just a great, great program that we have with Focus. Again, a lot of different topics, but today is one that is seasonal, if you will.
That's right. It is seasonal, but it also, you know, covers a lot of covers a lot of ground that Focus normally covers, which is a lot of the guest was talking about what we can grow here, so it's local. Christmas trees is agriculture, and we have some great agricultural programming here on WILL.
Absolutely.
And you got science. I mean, you got a lot of science going on here, and I know a lot of the Focus topics tend to we get some great speakers in. Luckily, we're associated with the University of Illinois. So, you know, we've got Science Friday coming up later, but right now we've got on Focus, we've got a little bit of seasonal agricultural science. It's a nice mix. It's what Focus does very well. And if you want to support this program, 217-244-9455, or go online to willpledge.org. And I want to emphasize this point. This is a very, very, very short drive. This will be the last Focus of the drive. We love, love, love to get people calling in during Focus. It's sort of our local flagship show. We believe strongly in what we're doing here and the direction the show has been moving over the last couple months. If you agree, please don't hesitate. Support this great local program. with Jim Meadows as your host and Lindsay Moon as your producer. We think they're doing great work. We hope you agree. 217-244-9455 or go online to willpledge.org.
Yeah, and you think of the topics that you've heard in the coming weeks, you know, things we brought forward about the Farm Bill and the tornado relief that's going on and the backyard chickens. And just recently, the day that Kennedy died was another wonderful program that we brought forward to you. I like the one about the future of AM radio that we had. We had the FCC, one of the folks from the FCC, one of our commissioners, was in on the phone and talking with Jim. And that was a great show. I've heard some sports stuff on Focus, which has been terrific, that Jeff has sat in and talked with pitchers and other professional baseball players. When I think of the topics that have gone around on Focus, it really looks at our audience to bring them in and make them participate with the program. Just think of the calls that we've received today and the calls that are received day in and day out that are related to the topics. And people want to ask questions, learn more, thought-provoking type programming that we bring to you. We would like to hear those calls. Give us a call, too, in basically a vote of support. And that vote of support is done in dollars to help us get to that $36,000 deadline, that deadline goal that we have in this three-day drive, 36 hours. The phone number, 217-244-9455, or you can go online to willpledge.org.
That's right. We're at about $19,500, which is fabulous. We're doing very, very well. We've heard from, I believe, about 70 folks around in the area. We'd love to hear from more. We want to get that momentum going. We want to keep it going through the morning. We want to hear from people who love Focus. It's 217-244-9455 or go online to willpledge.org and support this great program, this great station, and when you do that, you're also supporting this great community.
And welcome back to Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're continuing our look at Christmas trees. Real ones, no plastic trees here, thank you. We started the program talking with Gary Chastagner, who's done research on trees grown for Christmas tree use at Washington State University. He has traveled himself as far as Turkey to find new strains of promising trees for Christmas tree use. Now let's meet one of the folks growing those trees. Ron Evans is a second-generation Christmas tree farmer. He's based in the Decatur area, and he has a second farm in Wisconsin. Ron, welcome to Focus.
Good morning, Jim.
How's business this year, Ron?
We've had a good year. Initially, the weather was just fantastic for the Thanksgiving weekend. I don't know what's going to happen come this weekend because it doesn't look very good.
When the snow falls, and of course, it's Christmas time. You like to have a little snow, but if you have too much, that'll keep people from coming out.
Well, sometimes people just love to come out and walk through the snow, and other times, if it's a really severe storm, it will basically shut us down. So we just have to see what the weather brings.
What sort of Christmas trees, I mean trees for Christmas tree use, do you raise?
Here in Decatur, mostly Scotch pine and white pine.
Mm-hmm.
On the Wisconsin farm, we grow primarily balsam fir and Fraser fir.
I'm wondering, Gary Chastagner, who was on earlier, was telling me that Wisconsin is really one of the bigger Christmas tree growing states, not so much in a state like Illinois. Which of your farms is the bigger one?
The Decatur farm is bigger than our Wisconsin farm.
Okay, that's where your family first got started in the business?
Right.
Okay. Do you raise anything else? I mean, are you just a full-time Christmas tree farmer, or are there other things that you do at out there?
We do ball and burlap trees also, mostly evergreen, but we supply wholesale nurseries and individuals with various types of spruce and fir for landscaping trees.
So ball and burlap are trees that are ready to transplant.
Exactly. We dig the trees up. We put them in. We have a tree spade that digs the trees. We put them in burlap and then a wire basket to help support the root mass when the tree is being transported.
Well, if you have a question for Ron about Christmas trees, call us now at 1-800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Focus580. The phone number again, 1-800-222-WILL. Ron, I was wondering, especially listening to Gary Chastagner talking about always looking for better seeds for the trees grown for Christmas trees. Do you produce seeds from your own trees, or do you buy seeds for planting?
We buy seedlings. We don't actually buy seeds. We have tried to raise our own seedlings on our Illinois soil, and we find that there's not enough sand content in our soil. The other problem that we have on our particular farm is we're close to the Mahomet Aquifer, but not close enough that we really have a reliable irrigation supply, and small seedlings need a lot of water.
And that, you know, that raises the question, of course, we had a pretty bad drought last year. Did that affect your operation here in Illinois?
The last 3 years have been devastating as far as our seedling survival. We had a great year up until about June, at which point the rain basically shut off here in the Decatur area. In the past 3 years, I would say that we probably lost somewhere in the neighborhood of 90% of our new seedlings.
Well, that's of the new seedlings, not necessarily of the more mature trees.
The established trees, it doesn't seem to bother as much. We see it particularly in the fir and spruce, particularly blue spruce, do not like prolonged drought and high temperatures.
Now, you said that irrigation, you couldn't set up well for irrigation in Illinois. What about your Wisconsin operation?
Typically, they're in an area, our farm is up near Tomahawk up there, and they're in an area where they get ample rainfall. They did go through about a 10-year drought up there, but the temperatures are cooler, and it doesn't seem to affect the trees as much. So we've been able to survive. Even though we had a drought up there, we've been able to survive pretty well just with rainfall. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. When you choose seedlings for your trees, are you looking for particular qualities in the trees these seedlings grow up to be?
Yes, we've done quite a bit of research in trying to find the best seedling for our area. And there's not a lot of other tree growers in this area. We're not into the hybrids quite as much as possibly the row crop farmers. But yes, there are definitely seedlings that do better in our area than others.
Okay, so is it a particular species, or is it more like a particular strain?
It's more of a strain, more of a seed source than anything else. We find that like with our Scotch pine, the French blue don't do very well in this area, where some of the Austrian seed sources and things like that do much better.
Now, for your trees, I don't know how these operations are set up. Are you essentially maintaining a forest, or are you planting your trees in rows, for instance, for harvesting?
We plant them in rows and, of course, maintain them in rows. We trim every tree. We mow down every tree every year. We mow down the rows to try to reduce the competition, the weed competition with the trees. We use herbicides also to help reduce the weed competition. We do. We've introduced a non-native species to Illinois. So, if Christmas trees were maybe more native to our area, we would have more natural predators for some of the diseases that we do fight. So, you know, we try to minimize our use of herbicides and pesticides as much as possible, but likewise, as I say, we've introduced a non-native species, so we do have some issues there also.
By introducing a non-native species, is it more susceptible to problems than a native species that might be hardier?
They probably are. The only native evergreen in the Decatur area is the red cedar. So, and it does not have, there are issues with red cedars also, and we do not raise them commercially. But we have several different insects and molds that and funguses that attack the trees.
One thing I had been reading about was the Phytophthora root rot. Is that a problem for you at your farms?
It's present. It's not necessarily a problem because we don't raise that many fir here in central Illinois.
That's a fir tree problem particularly.
It's more specific to firs, yes. And we do raise some Fraser fir and some Canaan fir here on the farm, as well as some concolor fir. We do see some phytophthora-related issues, but as I say, we don't raise that many here, so it's as much cultural as it is environmental in the Decatur area. Our ground temperatures get a little too hot. We get a little too dry in the middle of summer for the fir trees to survive.
Now, I'm wondering. You said that you trim the trees, so that's part of something to is that something to encourage growth?
It's more to improve density. We hire a crew of 12 to 15, normally high school and college students, every year to help us trim the trees. If you can imagine 15 people swinging machetes out in the field trimming trees, it's something to watch.
But what time of year does the tree trimming take place?
We usually start around the 1st of June, and of course we have to teach all the, I call them kids because I'm an old man now, I guess, but anyway, we teach them how the trees grow and what we expect them to do as far as pruning and shearing the tree.
Swinging machetes at evergreen trees in June sounds just about as un-Christmassy an occupation as I can think of.
It's definitely a show to watch.
Now, I take it you must have a regular schedule as far as what you have to do on the farm throughout the year. Can you give me an idea of how your year breaks down?
Absolutely. Typically, in the dead of winter, I spend most of my time repairing equipment that we've we're just like any other farmer. We work everything hard during our harvest season. So January, February, I spend a lot of time doing taxes and repairing equipment. Come March, we usually begin some of our insect control, and we begin digging trees. We begin spraying herbicides to control weeds. Depending on where we're working, in the season, that sometimes goes into April. We usually can dig trees for the ball and burlap trade up until about the 15th of April, again, depending on the season and how rapidly spring comes on. Once the trees start to actively grow, we have to stop digging evergreens until roughly July or so to allow the new growth to harden off. Of course, start about May, we begin our mowing, and if you can imagine mowing 150 acres four or five times a year, we spend a lot of time on mowers. June, of course, we start our shearing. That usually goes for about 6 weeks. After that, we do tree counts and start our marketing for trees. Come August, we try, if there's enough moisture in the soil, we start digging trees and trying to promote our ball and burlap business. And we also start our sales for Christmas trees, start notifying wholesale customers and trying to get their orders locked in so we know what each customer wants. We actually start our harvest usually right around the 1st of November, particularly for our balsam. And a lot of our neighbors up there tell me I'm crazy to wait that late. Some of the Christmas trees are actually harvested, mid-October, early to mid-October, but I usually try to put it off as long as I can to give our customers fresher tree as possible. We bring the trees, the Wisconsin trees in here, just before Thanksgiving, and that's when our retail starts to pick up. So
you're in retail right now, I would think.
Exactly. We're in retail sales now.
How's retail coming in? Of course, with the snowfalls tonight heavy, that could change tomorrow, but has business been pretty good?
It's been a good year. With Thanksgiving being as late as it was this year, we had a really big weekend, the biggest weekend we ever had at Thanksgiving time this year. And the next weekend was fair. But I don't know whether people are watching the weather, or there's not as many people procrastinating this year or whatnot, but it's been rather slow this week.
Well, we're talking to Ron Evans. He's a Christmas tree farmer in the Decatur area. He also has a farm up in Wisconsin as well, here on Focus on WILL. If you have a call for or a question for Ron, call us now at 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. We're at will-talk@illinois.edu and Twitter and Facebook at Focus580. A caller who couldn't stay on the line wanted to know, really, I guess, about what Gary Chastagner would talk about, would call the post-harvest care of Christmas trees. And finally, the end result, what's the proper way to dispose of a tree?
Well, trees are biodegradable. Several people will try to bring a tree either back to us or put it in a lake for fish habitat. We used to collect, we have in the past collected 80 to 100 trees, and then we'll have fishing organizations come to the farm, pick up the trees, and actually put them in a lake. The trees can also be chipped. I've participated in chipping programs for years. The chips make an excellent mulch for around trees, and we've also supplied that same mulch to environmental groups who are building trails and things like that. So, you know, I'd say the biggest advantage of a natural tree is it's biodegradable, it's reusable. You're not using a Christmas tree that then goes to a landfill and sits there for several hundred years.
I want to compare notes with you and Gary Chastagner of the best way of keeping. How long can you keep a tree in good shape up on the stand?
Typically up to 2 months.
Up to 2 months, and that's if you're watering it, correct?
You have to water it and take care of it. Don't keep the tree near a heat duct, or if you have it near a heating duct, shut that duct off so that you don't have hot, dry air blowing on the tree. A lot of it has to do with the care of the tree and the variety of the tree.
And as far as additives in the water or any of those, the sugary things, I've even heard of aspirin, is that of any use?
They seem to help a little, but a lot of the tree moisture has to do with keeping the pan always full of water. Don't ever let it go dry. The additives might help break down some of the sap that would form if the tree ever got dry, but once you've reached that point, the best thing to do, and I hate to say this, is take the tree down, make a fresh cut on the tree, and put it back up. It's a lot of work to do just because you forgot to water the tree.
And, you know, in preparing for this show, I read of a gradual increase in the use of artificial trees over the years, but has that impacted your business in any way? I mean, what do you see as far as people coming in, and why do they tell you they've chosen the real tree over the artificial one?
I think it's more tradition as much as it is anything else, Jim. I think people like to have the live tree in their house. There's just something about having a live tree versus a plastic tree in the house, I think.
Okay. How late do you expect to be selling trees in this season?
We've got our family Christmas at the Saturday before Christmas, so we're going to close, I believe it's the 19th this year, Friday the 19th.
Is your tree already up yourself?
Yes, I've got two trees up right now, and neither one of them are decorated yet, but that's a project for one of these evenings.
Okay. What sort of heights are people buying trees at? Do any people go for really big trees, or is it pretty much to fit in a ceiling of a regular size room?
The tallest tree we sold this year was 22 feet. We have people that buy trees anywhere from 5 feet up to 22, and we sell several in the 10, 12, 14, even 16-foot range.
Well, we're just about out of time. Ron Evans, I wanted to thank you for talking with us about the business of growing Christmas trees and getting them out there. Ron Evans grows Christmas trees in the Decatur area and Wisconsin. Thanks also to Gary Chastagner, plant pathologist specializing in Christmas trees at Washington State University, who appeared earlier in the hour. Ron, thanks for being on the show.
Jim, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And thanks to everyone who called or emailed questions. Our apologies for anyone who didn't make it to the air. We invite you to continue the conversation on our program at our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. Today's show was produced by Sari Lesk and Lindsay Moon. Sari has been our intern working on production and research since September. We'd like to bid her a fond farewell and best of luck in the future. And Mike Pritchard is our technical director today. Monday on Focus, following a campus outbreak of meningitis, Princeton University received federal permission to administer a non-approved European meningitis vaccine to its students. Meanwhile, the state of Illinois will make meningitis shots mandatory for all 6th and 12th graders. That's beginning next year. We'll talk with a couple of health experts about these developments concerning meningitis and the vaccines for meningitis on Monday's program. Remember, Focus is live each weekday morning at 10, and there's a replay at 8 p.m. You can hear Focus over the air on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu, where you can also listen to past programs, years of past programs, and sign up for our free downloadable podcast. That's at will.illinois.edu/focus. I'm Jim Meadows. This is Focus on WILL.